one case on the docket, and that's the case of Wells versus Automotive Service Garage. We're ready when counsel is ready.
May it please the court. I'm David Rosenblum. I represent the appellant, Mr. Wells.
Do you care to reserve any time for rebuttal, sir?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you. And
to the extent that I have do not address all the issues raised in my brief, I rely on that as well. I argued to the court today that I believe that the commission below, which in its ruling that the claimant failed to prove the causation, is simply not supported by the clear weight of the evidence and ignores what I consider to be the likely application of the compensable consequences and two causes.
Well, you say the clear weight of the evidence, and if we were weighing evidence, that might be a good argument. But we're not in that position here, are we?
That's correct.
I mean, if Dr. Chandra's opinion is credited, which it appears that it was, doesn't that resolve the causation question?
Well, I believe that in doing so, it would be ignoring the application of the compensable consequences. In other words, I believe that it's a conclusion that is unsupported by any evidence. It is a conclusion that was drawn,
But isn't a medical opinion itself evidence, and especially the medical opinion of the treating physician?
Yes, but the treating physician 2 years earlier, based on only records that he saw at the time. In fact, I posed the question to him. We have a situation where a gentleman had a compensable injury because he had a fracture of the left foot. It was so severe, it was ultimately diagnosed by the treating doctor, Chandra, of a Jones fracture, which has been described throughout the appendix as a significantly different and more troubling type of a fracture than just a fracture. In fact, it was the subject of a non-union which means it doesn't heal back. And so Dr. Chandra had done the surgery to implant, put in pins, and then had to do a second surgery to take them out. And then the last time he saw him was in May of 2013, where he reported that he thought that it was in good healing. And that was the last time he saw him at that point. And then my client, the claimant, indicated he had problems with the foot. So he requested of the Dr. Chandra's office to be reevaluated. And this was not permitted. Our position was that the Dr. Chandra's office told them that they wouldn't allow it unless they got permission from the carrier. But in any event,
And Dr. Chandra said that wouldn't.
That wasn't the case. But well, he had personal knowledge. But I think that that's really kind of a red herring. Why? Because the carrier wrote us and said, we're not going to give you permission to go back to the treating doctor reevaluated.
Setting this thing at its basic foundation, counsel, isn't it true that essentially what we have here is a battle of the experts? You have Dr. Ammerman, Feldman, and Bowden on one side, and Drs. Leavitt, Ward, and Chandra on the other side. And isn't the commission in the most unique position to assess those kinds of determinations? And essentially, as long as they're supported by the record, are we stuck with it?
Well, I would agree that that's generally the case. But I think that in this particular case, what I would try to alert the court here to is this, that if you look at Dr. Ward's, they rely on, and Dr. Ward, so he sees this claimant in the end of 2015 and in the beginning, writes a report at that time, and in 2016, and what does he report? He reports that he does have tenderness here and some irregularity in that foot at the site of where the injury is.
Was that before or after the intervening accident? Wasn't there an intervening
accident? Yes, but the intervening accident had nothing to do with the foot. There is no evidence of any injury to the foot. It was neck, shoulder, that sort of thing. So that's not going to be a cause. I would point out, and so there is evidence that he had some complaints and some objective medical evidence that there was something going on at the site of the original injury. And it's true that Dr. Ward then describes a Jones fracture as being significantly more difficult to heal, and that he did not have at that time other x-rays to determine the quality of the healing from this 2012 accident. Now, it's unfortunate in my perspective that he wrote that because of this, that the a unhealed or continuing this problems with the fracture is an unlikely scenario. I take it that because of his earlier discussions of about the Jones fracture being more difficult to treat than the healing, and he didn't have a way to assess the quality of the healing, that might have been a typo, but I'm stuck with that record. I grant that. And so I argued to you that while the commission could make a determination of weighing the various experts, I feel the argument is that they didn't assess that. There's no record.
But if they accept the typo as true, obviously, as you have acknowledged, we don't get to say whether it is or it isn't a typo. So it's unlikely to be a complication of the Jones fracture healing, and the treating physician says it's not causally related. That those two pieces of evidence are in front of them, whether they're right, wrong, or indifferent, they are in front of them. If they credit that, how's that not weighing the evidence?
Because the Dr. Chandra, who says that he says it's not related, is based on a fill-in questionnaire, and when I question fill-in questionnaire, is it related? What is he basing it on? He's not basing it on any subsequent information. He's not basing on the MRIs, which we produce, which the commission did not even go into, that showed problems on the MRI. I would point out that when I questioned him about this in his deposition, I said, Dr. Chandra, assume for the moment that Mr. Wells, that you became aware that he was complaining on or after the May 2013 pain in the foot, the left foot, and it was bothering him, and he wanted to come in to see you. Assuming all those, would you have either recommended him to see you, or take additional evaluations, radiological? And so he answered and says, I would have to evaluate the patient, examine the patient, listen to his complaints, and do any diagnostic studies. With all that information, I would try to determine the source and origin of the pain and address the required treatment. So without the benefit of what he said he would do, he answered a questionnaire that says it's not related. And so how could the commission rely on that, admittedly, the doctor's own admission, that is probably not what he would ordinarily do to determine?
Did you move to strike the questionnaire or have it removed from evidence for lacking a sufficient foundation or anything like that? And so it's there. I mean, you understand where we are. It's there.
I understand, but I understand the ruling is that ordinarily as a. But I believe that the rule of law is that the determination of whether medical treatment is required or necessary is both a factual and a legal determination, and is considered de novo, not giving the greater, and I believe here they gave too much.
What would you suggest is the legal component of that analysis?
Let me see if I can address precisely. The legal component is that I think that that no reasonable interpretation of the facts that would lead to the conclusion that the commissioner and the commission did.
So that maybe gets you a mixed question, but doesn't get you de novo review. That doesn't.
Right.
But even if you get de novo over the mixed question, we'd still be bound by the underlying factual finding, and there is evidence, and it appears the factual finding was that there is no causality between whatever's happening now.
But
the work injury. And I understand you think that was a faulty one to draw, but how do we get around that there is evidence to support that? And even if we give, there's a legal component to the question, it only gets, the legal part of it only gets asked if there's a causal relationship, which we have said for the last 32 years on this court is a purely factual question.
Because I believe that in this circumstance, the only conclusion of fact that the commission below determined to be that it's not connected is the very first questionnaire from Dr. Chandra, which was not based on any new evidence or any examination, but simply a fill-in report, which he, on my examination of him, indicated it's not really based on facts.
Well, hypothetically, person suffers a work-related injury, has it surgically treated, follows up with the surgeon, The surgeon concludes that we have perfect union, everything's perfect, you're 100%, you're released, you go away for some period of time.
Right.
All right? You then come back in a couple of years and said there's a problem here. And the physician, why can't a physician conclude, potentially conclude, that whatever the problem is, it's a new problem because we were back to at least 100%?
I would agree with that if you did away with compensable consequences. And that is because medical conditions are not stagnant. And while it may be in certain cases, that could be the case. In other words, if I hurt my foot, which I happen to have, okay, and I get a ward for life, and I come in and complain about my left hand, that would be clearly, it would be difficult to make that causation. But where the site of my complaints are the same site as my award, I should be at least entitled to an evaluation, at least by the panel. And to be denied that vitiates the lifetime award of a medical, because if a carrier unilaterally can't tell me I cannot go back to my panel doctor and then engages that panel doctor against me to say, well, it's not related, is it? Oh, no, it's not. And I fill it out, but I haven't examined that doctor. I have no new medical, then I have been denied a lifetime award.
And those are fantastic credibility arguments as to why the commission should not have accepted Dr. Chandra's opinion. And I've had the opportunity to ask this question before, and when I speak on this, I talk about if 97 out of 100 people, including all 11 judges of this court, would agree with you that Dr. Chandra's opinion, because he didn't re-examine him, we wouldn't credit it. But if the three people out of the 100 are named Marshall, Newman, and Rappaport, where does that leave us?
I understand, but I don't believe this is sacrosanct. I do believe that there are limitations on even the assessment of determinations. I believe that it has to be, and I believe here, and the law is or should be, that where no reasonable finding could be supported, that no reasonable person would come to the conclusion that the commission did, based on the evidence, that is not given the weight that it should be. And I appreciate the court. I also would like to point out that I believe that notwithstanding any of the other rulings, that I would be entitled to the return of the fees that I paid to Dr. Chandra for a fact deposition under 1.8G. Because he only gave that fill-in report. I didn't understand under what circumstances he could, what basis he would have for that. I took the deposition, required me to pay the money, and I believe that I'm entitled to that.
As a general matter regarding the commission's rules, if you think we give them a wide berth on facts, then of course traditionally on their own interpretation of their own rules that they promulgate, we give them a really wide berth. So what specifically, not a fairness argument, not an equity argument, but how did they violate their own rules?
They cite it to the case that says, well, no, because in the case that I cited, did they cite to that case? And in that case, the claimant had hired a doctor had filled in the questionnaire and wanted to take their own doctor's examination and then wanted the defense to pay for it. And they said, no, that's yours. But you are entitled under that rule. You are entitled. If it was the other side, that here the carrier's doctor, that you needed the additional information, that rule says you shall. And so the case that was cited by the commission was interpreted wrong because it clearly supports my proposition that where I have to take that fact, that position to fill in what his understanding and his opinion was, because all he did was fill in the questionnaire, I should not have to pay for that. And I think that they just applied the rule wrong. But not that there was discretion. They just got it backwards. Thank you. Thank you for hearing me out this morning.
Thank you.
And thank you for making the accommodations to change.
That has worked out very nicely as far as the court's concerned.
Thank you. Thank you for driving down 95.
Ms. Belleville?
I drove down 95 this morning.
Yeah, thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Amanda Tapscott Belliveau, and I represent the appellees in this matter. Thank you for hearing us today. Primarily, this is an issue of causation in this claim, which is a fine
effect. Let me see if I can take the argument that your opponent colleague makes and see if you can help me get through it. He suggested in the context of this case, essentially it was fundamentally unfair what happened, that there was a request for an independent investigation of sorts that didn't take place. The doctor just sort of signed off on something that the employer sort of pushed in front of him, and that does not accomplish the purposes of the act. I may have overstated his argument, but I'm trying to put it in a context maybe that I can ask you the question. What would be your response?
Absolutely, Your Honor. We would argue that the facts have been slightly misstated. The records do show that Dr. Chandra did have the advantage of reviewing the claimant's subsequent medical records, and that's reflected in his questionnaire as well as his deposition, and it is in the record from pages 403 to 490, the records that he had the benefit of reviewing. And we would argue that he was in a unique position. He actually treated the claimant for a significant period of time, including conservative modalities, two surgeries, and he was able to actually visualize during that second surgery that the fracture at issue in this case had successfully fused and fully healed at the time that he was performing the hardware removal.
We do end up in the slightly unusual position where he's vouching for his own repair.
Yes.
You know, if I go back to the same mechanic, I fully expect him to say, no, this must be a new problem. Everything worked out. I mean, is that just a credibility argument that has been resolved against him?
Yes, Your Honor. This is a credibility finding by the commission, and that is a finding of fact. And I do believe it's supported by credible evidence in this record, given both Dr. Chandra's opinions as well as it being supported by Drs. Ward and Dr. Levitt, who were not vouching for their own
Do you
work.
Believe our review is a question of law, question of fact, or a mixed question of law and fact?
Well, I think the issues in this case are questions of fact, and therefore there's just an assessment as to whether credible evidence supports the findings of fact.
So you would take issue with your opponent colleague's suggestion that it's a mixed question?
Correct, Your Honor, because this is primarily about causation as opposed to whether treatment is reasonable and necessary. And without there being causation, reasonable and necessary, doesn't even get
there. There are very few cases that we have where we have not upheld the commission on a causation determination.
Yes, Your Honor.
Hypothetically, you have a patient who believes but doesn't know, because, well, he's a patient, that the problem is related. And the treating physician from the panel, for whatever reason, not saying this is this case, but refuses to see him.
Yes.
And he goes off and hires his own physician. If the commission finds that whatever is discovered is causally related, employer's on the hook for all of that, right? Is there any question about that?
Yes, in certain circumstances, Your Honor, holding an unauthorized physician, the employer responsible for the cost of treatment with an unauthorized physician has been held to be something that should be exceptionally rare.
But it would fit within the hypothetical I gave you.
Correct,
treating,
Your Honor.
He tried to see the treating physician refuses.
Correct, Your Honor.
If the treating physician just adamantly takes the position, I fixed this. I took the hardware out. It was perfectly in union. Anything that's happened here is unrelated. Maybe you did something else. Maybe you did something new, but it's not related. Is there, and therefore, I don't need to see you again. It's not related. With an award of lifetime medical benefits, how does a claimant ever vindicate or potentially vindicate what might be a problem if the treating physician just is refusing?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that would come down to the claimant would have to show causation through medical evidence, and also that the treatment...
But how do I get that without going to an unauthorized physician?
I do understand that, Your Honor, and I think in those situations where unauthorized physicians have been deemed necessary, there's been also a finding of inadequate treatment. And it would not apply to the facts of this particular claim. I think it's a very fact-specific determination that the commission reviews on those claims.
Ultimately, regarding how any of the rest of that played out, is the commission's ultimate determination on this record that there is no causation? Does that answer all the questions?
I do believe it does in this record, Your Honor, because under the findings of this case, we have a situation where they are weighing conflicting medical opinions, and their determinations regarding weighing conflicting medical opinions are also findings of fact. It's credibility of the evidence, and right here we have Drs. Levitt, Dr. Chandra, Dr. Ward, all saying the same thing, coming to the same conclusion, and we have Drs. Bowden and Dr. Feldman retained by the claimant in this case to review, and they had incomplete and inaccurate medical information. Therefore, they can't be relied upon for determinations of credibility.
We have cases, few and far between, do we not, that stand for the proposition that if a physician's opinion isn't based on a complete picture, that it can be disregarded. Not only can it be disregarded, it has to be. And the classic example is actually on the other side, where a claimant has gone in and to seek medical treatment, and the doctor says it's related, and then you go, the employer's counsel comes back later and says, okay, it was a back injury, and the person said, this is the first time my back's ever hurt, and that's how the doctor links it up.
Yes.
You go back in as the employer's counsel, and you go, doctor, if you had known that the patient had had 14 years of treatment with a different neurosurgeon for back problems, would that have changed your opinion? Why, yes, it would. I am confident you've had that scenario where you've come in and argued that that opinion is not worth anything because it's not based on a full foundation.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Why is it? It seems to be your opponent's argument that that is this case, except the roles are reversed.
Yes,
why is that not this case?
I would argue it is this case, but against Dr. Bowden and Feldman. In this case, Dr. Chandra did have the subsequent records. It's reflected. They were attached to the questionnaires. They were produced with the questionnaires. So it could be seen in the record that Dr. Chandra reviewed those records, and he acknowledges reviewing those records in his questionnaire responses and in his deposition. So we would argue that that actually does not apply against Dr. Chandra, Dr. Levitt, Dr. Ward here. However, Drs. Bowden and Feldman, there's no indication that they had review of any other provider's records. They had no knowledge of the intervening accident, and that's by the admission of the claimant, who never disclosed that to them. And furthermore, they were given an inaccurate history where the claimant reported that he had to stop working due to his chronic foot pain, which is not supported by the evidence. Additionally, he said he'd been continuously treating since the time of the accident for that chronic foot pain, whereas there's a 2.5-year gap in treatment. During that time, he was released to full duty, successfully returned to full duty, had no issues whatsoever performing his pre-injury job till this intervening accident. And thereafter, he was unable to continue working due to this unrelated accident. So they were basing this on false history provided by the claimant during his appointments. And they had the benefit of one visit with the claimant and based their opinions off his recitation of this history. So in this matter, we would argue that this is all coming down to factual finding. And the commission does have credible evidence to support that factual finding. There have been arguments that they did not properly consider the other opinions. The full commission specifically recites in their opinion that they have weighed those opinions, that they read the records of Drs. Bowden and Feldman, considered those records, and do not find them sufficient to overcome the opinions of Drs. Chandra, Drs. Levitt, and Dr. Ward, which shows that there is credible evidence and they have properly considered and weighed the conflicting medical opinions in this matter, making a finding of fact that the opinions of Dr. Chandra and Levitt and Ward are more credible. And ultimately, there is no grounds for additional treatment or a change in treating physician when the treatment is not causally related to the work accident.
Switching to Mr. Rosenblum's last argument, assume for the sake of discussion that we were to agree with you on the merits as to how this case should be resolved, what would you say to us about his statement that notwithstanding all of that, he's still entitled to recover the attorney's fees because of the way the statute is set up?
Yes, the commission is given great discretion when it comes to determinations of whether attorney's fees are appropriate. Whether an employer has defended the claim in bad faith is a determination made from the perspective of the employer. Here, the employer had reasonable grounds to believe that they were defending this claim in good faith and, in fact, prevailed, which further supports the fact that they were defending this claim in good faith. And unless there's a clear abuse of discretion by the commission, findings regarding an award of attorney's fees would not be overturned.
But doesn't that theory, though, provide a disincentive for attorneys to go forward in cases? In other words, if I could go ahead and take on this case, I'm essentially setting myself up to lose money on it because I'm taking on the cause, which I believe may well be meritorious, and I have to do this to get the ball rolling. Doesn't that provide a disincentive to help people
Well, Your Honor, I would argue that in some cases it is appropriate to award attorney's fees, and the commission has made that finding time and time again. Oftentimes it's in the setting of a physician refusing to comply with discovery requests, and the only way to get that information is to take a deposition that would otherwise not have occurred, and the claimant has a right to gather that information at the expense of the employer. Here, this was not the case because the doctor was willing to engage in discovery. Written discovery could have been conducted. He was filling out questionnaires, and he was equally accessible to either party. And in cases such as that, either based on cooperation of the physician or alternatively the reasonable defense grounds, it does not apply here where there would be an appropriate award of attorney's fees. Pertaining to causation, we would also note that the causation is kind of the crux of the issue when it comes to any other means of recovery in this matter, including the two causes rule or compensable consequence rule. Causation must still be established. It must directly flow from the injury if it is subject to the compensable consequence rule, or the injury must directly cause or contribute to the condition. For the two causes rule, that is not the case here. Again, without causation, there's no link, and it cannot be considered compensable under either theory. The causation here is supported by the findings of the commission, and we would ask that it be found that credible evidence did, in fact, support those findings, given the medical opinions that they relied upon and cited in support of that finding. Your Honors, I will not take up more of your time than is necessary. If there are no more questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Rosenblum, it looked like you had 50 seconds left on the clock. If there's anything more you want to use that time for, you're welcome to do so.
Thank you. It seems that the focus has been on the causation, but I always thought that the rule was that if I have a lifetime award and that I think something's related, that medical diagnosis to determine whether it's related is compensable regardless of whether there is causation. That's what we sought in the first place, and we were denied that. And then the issue became,
even if that's the kind of the general rule, doesn't it start from the premise that there has to be some linking up of the two?
Right.
And you use the absurd for demonstrative purposes, the hand and the foot. And I realize this is the foot and the foot. But if the commission concludes that there just is no evidence linking the two up, why is the employer required to pay for something that's not related?
I think if it's a foot and foot and same site, you have to at least diagnose it, examine it, evaluate. That's all I think. Thank you very much.
Thank you. In keeping with the tradition of this court, we will step down and greet counsel, and that will conclude the docket, and the court hereafter will be adjourned.
Thank you.